News in Jacksonville.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Now, Abigail Spanberger, she is the Democratic nominee for Congress in the 7th District. She'll be squaring off against Dave Bratt in the Republican two-term incumbent in one of the hottest races in the country. Everybody's following it because suburbs are changing and all that. And so it's a fascinating race. And, you know, Dave is Dave. He doesn't back down. Neither does Abigail. So this is going to be fun. And also, we're going to have a debate. They've both committed to a John Fredericks radio and TV debate, getting the details worked out. Joining us now, Abigail Spanberger. Abigail, great to have you back.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, look, I'm fired up today about this because you served in the CIA a very long time in a lot of different capacities, senior positions. I don't want to get into it. We did that last time. But you look at the Helsinki press conference, and now with President Trump backtracked a little bit and says, I meant wouldn't, not would, et cetera. And, you know, we were talking about earlier, Abigail, that, you know, it's hard for all of us to believe everything the intel community says on face value because of the WMD situation that we know was a complete and utter lie, right? Or if not a lie, it was certainly bad intel because there were no WMDs there and we never, ever should have gotten involved in that war. So how do you frame that based on some of the results to what the president said in Helsinki?
Well, I think it's a really important position, or it's the first part of it is really looking to see how this is different. And I completely agree with you. There was really bad intelligence that led us to war in Iraq. And at this point in time, nobody disputes that. But what we're looking at now is the fact that we know a foreign adversary government, a longtime foreign adversary government, meddled. And I'm not talking about collusion. I'm talking about their efforts to meddle and interfere in our elections, the active measures that they took against us, the fact that they hacked a major political party, they hacked one of our presidential candidates, they took active measures to try and impact our election. And from an intelligence perspective, you know, there is evidence that they have done that. There is a strong trail of evidence. So none of our intelligence, no members of our intelligence community disagree on the fact that they took those active measures. And I think that really the concern as a former intel officer myself is underestimating Russian active measures is a dangerous mistake for our national security. And honestly, I think it's a difficult thing when we're talking about in 2016, the active measures were against our election. And so I understand that, you know, then as political parties, people get nervous about talking about, you know, are we talking about the actual election and the outcome of the election? That's not what I'm talking about. I don't want to relitigate what happened in 2016. My concern as an American, my concern as a former intel officer, is that we know without a shadow of a doubt that a foreign adversary nation took active measures against us in 2016. And in 2016, the target was the election, you know, and who knows what it's going to be in 2018, 2019, 2020, because if they were able to hack into a major political party and use that information to meddle and interfere, then what happens when it's our critical infrastructure? What happens when it's our corporations? I mean, this, what they've done and what they've proven that they're able to do is probably incredibly worrisome. And so that's my perspective. You know, in order to make these conversations productive, we need to be aware of the risk and looking forward so that we can avert that risk.
Abigail, so I'm a student of history. I grew up in the 60s, right? So the Russians have been interfering in elections across the West basically since 1919. I mean, I grew up when Gus Hall ran for president, what, five times, Communist Party USA, funded by the KGB, and everybody was aware of it. There were no Americans donating to him, right? All the money came from Russia, from the USSR at the time, and they would run a ticket. They would get on the ballot that was funded. I mean, back then it was legal. I remember what in the 68 campaign, Lamar Hunt, that owned the Kansas City Chiefs AFL team, gave George Wallace in a meeting $200,000 of cash in a briefcase. So back then there were no rules and you could do whatever you wanted. But, I mean, why is it different now? Because they've been doing this forever.
It's different now because the methods that they're able to use can reach and can permeate our society and our conversations in a way that they never could before. And I completely agree with you. You're right in terms of what's happened historically. They've always meddled. They've always been involved. They've always had an interest in sort of trying to sway our elections, but or in trying to be involved. But the difference is that they are using technology in a way where we don't know that it's coming from them. They're using technology in a way that they are able to get proprietary information. And so, you know, looking, if they attract, endeavor to attack one of our largest corporations, what sort of information, proprietary corporate information, could they get to then undermine that company's ability to work internationally or to, you know, potentially disrupt the stock market by using proprietary information to make trades or to make purchases. I mean, there are so many places where the fact that it used to be outgoing messages that they're pushing, the skill set and the ability that they have now is that they can come and pull information and they can take information and use it against people, against industry, against against, you know, the country. And that's really the difference. And that's why we need to, as Americans, really be united on the fact that we recognize that there were active measures taken against us and that we recognize that those are a threat to our national security at all levels, because it is different, and really working to understand how it is different is incredibly important.
You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, trucking the truth across America, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. We're with Abigail Spanberger, former longtime CIA executive, I guess, operative, both covert and overt. And she is now retired and running for Congress in the 7th District of Virginia. That's the Central Virginia area. She's going up against two-term incumbent Dave Bratt, who knocked off Eric Cantor in 2014. In, I think, maybe the most watched race in the United States. Going to be very, very interesting. So, Abigail, let me ask you this. So the president comes out yesterday, says, you know, I read the transcript. I didn't mean would. I meant wouldn't. And I get it, and I believe my intel and intel community and the Russians meddled, and they got to stop it. I mean, okay, so Obama said knock it off. So now the president says he misspoke, and he now thinks that, says unequivocally, the U.S. intel community has this right. Do you believe him?
I believe that he recognizes potentially that the U.S. government has it right. But my concern is, what's the next step? And my concern in the way we've been talking about these active measures against the U.S. in 2016 is everyone is focused on 2016 in the conversations, including the president. And where he should be focused and where people should be focused is taking a hardline stance and say, this happened in 2016 unequivocally. The evidence is there. It is unacceptable. It's an aggressive attack against our democracy. And moving forward, it is not something that we will permit to happen again. And I think that that strong stance is what is necessary so that the Russians know that they cannot do it again, and frankly, so that the American people know that it is a continued it is a continued threat. It is a continued concern. And so, you know, that's looking at the press conferences that have been held. I think they've been really less than assertive and aggressive on that point.
So what about the fact the Bloomberg story came out last night that Rod Rothenstein, Deputy Attorney General, went to the president? They don't have that good of a relationship, as everyone knows. Went there, said, look, we have these 10 indictments. They've been indicted by a grand jury. They're coming down. You want me to get them out now? You want me to wait till after your summit with Putin? What do you want me to do? The president says, get them out now so I can confront Putin with it privately at the meeting, which apparently he did. Otherwise, he would have said, just wait till I get home. Mm-hmm. So what do you make of that?
I'm a trust but verify kind of person. So, you know, I read that report. I think it makes, I mean, it seems fully plausible. My follow-up question would be, if we were going to come into this meeting at a point of strength, recognizing that there were Russian intel officers who were being indicted for their work in trying to interfere interfering with our elections, and all of the other offenses laid out in that indictment, I'm not sure why that wouldn't have been a strong point of discussion at the press conference, and I question why the summit would have been closed to other diplomats, because if we are going to be confronting another country about the adversarial, aggressive tactics that they took to undermine our democracy, I think that that's something that, from a point of strength, we should do very openly and aggressively and assertively. So there's a little bit of a disconnect between the intentions that were laid out and kind of highlighted in that Bloomberg piece and then what the actual results and what we witnessed watching the press conferences.
We're with Abigail Spanberger. She is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th District in Virginia, November 8th, going up against Republican Dave Brat. So, Abigail, it sounds like what you're saying, that if he confronted Putin with these privately, you know, he should do that. Obviously, I think he did, because otherwise, why bother to get them released until now? But it sounds like that your beef is he should have made that evident in a public format, and he didn't really do that. And he said he messed up a word, but I guess you were looking, as many of others were, you were looking for more a public display, right?
Well, we have a president who will publicly sit in front of other world leaders and take an aggressive stance, even among our closest allies. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it is incredibly concerning that the public view of the stance that he takes towards an adversarial nation that attempted to essentially attack and undermine the most foundational piece of our democracy, our elections, that when standing side by side with a leader like Vladimir Putin, that he would not take that same level of an aggressive stance that he's shown with our closest allies. So there's really a disconnect for me there. And while it's been reported that he was a lot stronger in the one-on-one meeting, how are we to know? And it is completely at odds with how it is that he, his stance with Vladimir Putin and everything he stood standing next to him, and even the tenor of that press conference was at odds with the fact that he was standing next to a man who led essentially an attack on our democracy. And for me, that was stunning.
Abigail, do you care to conjecture on why the president maybe was not strong enough in the public meeting as he says he was in the private meeting?
No, I it is puzzling to me. And there is a lot of conjecture out there. But it is disappointing to me as an American. It is concerning to me as someone who worked in national security and cares deeply about national security. Mm-hmm. But what the reason behind it was, I'm just not sure. And I would hope that our president and really, you know, everyone in elected office would understand the significant threat that moving forward, the Russians, who at this point have seemingly, you know, started to get away with the active measures they took against us in the past, the threat of them doing it in the future if we're not taking a strong stance against it.
So, Abigail, if you were in Congress now, what would you recommend the president do? What action do you want him to take? What do you want him to do? How do you solve this?
Yeah. Moving forward from today, how do you solve it? Moving forward from today, I think that we need members of Congress to put country first. We need members of Congress to recognize that in admitting or discussing the fact that the Russians interfered with our elections in 2016, we are not relitigating the 2016 elections. And I think that's an incredibly important piece of it, because once we go down that rabbit hole of the election and how it turned out and who got these votes here and there, it's a distraction. And it's a welcome distraction for the Russians, because we need to be focused on the fact that they had the technical capability to do it, and that our infrastructure, be it the way that Facebook sells ads, or, you know, the way Americans consume information, or the way they were able to hack into our voting machines, though there's, from everything I've read, no evidence that they actually tampered with the results, right? The fact that they even had the ability to do that is highly concerning. And so members of Congress should be focused on moving forward to make sure that our 2018 elections are safe, that every place possible we can ensure that people within the private sector, and there's been a lot of this going on, and Facebook and Twitter have both made strong changes to the way that you buy political ads. There's a higher threshold to avoid some of these foreign-bought ads. We also need to ensure that we're moving on campaign finance reform laws that can ensure that we don't have foreign money funneling into our elections. And at this point in time, there is still the possibility to do that. And so there's some good legislation before Congress that would work on closing some of those loopholes. And I think that people need to find this discussion not as a point of polarization, but really as a point for us to come together as Americans and recognize this is not about the presidency, this is not about a political party, this is about the fact that, as you said, a foreign adversary that has been meddling with us for close to 100 years continues to do so and has become incredibly successful at it because the technological capability that they have is so expansive and so dangerous. And so in terms of we need to be ensuring that any conversations related to this are focused on moving forward and focused on avoiding threats to our infrastructure, to our corporations, to our elections in the future. And for me, that is the most important piece.
We're with Abigail Spanberger. Only got a couple more minutes, Abigail. Do you favor any type of retaliation? I understand you want to put checkpoints in place. Do you favor additional sanctions, expel more diplomats? Do you favor any retaliation based on the 10 GRU operatives that were indicted?
Yeah, I think at this point, I mean, you know, Congress had already previously said they wanted to put sanctions on Russia. That's not something we move forward on. I think that's something that Congress needs to revisit and, you know, in coordination with the president needs to really take a strong look at doing that. That's something that I would generally be in favor of. I think that we also need to, you know, see what happens with the indictments of these 10 Russian officers. How does the Russian government respond to that? The fact that the Russian president would offer the opportunity to have Russian intel officers assist with our investigation is incredulous to me. That's certainly an offer that we should not pursue. But we need to take a strong stance on this, and some of it is vis-a-vis directly how we engage with the Russians. But some of it is how we really make sure that we're fortifying our security and ensuring that our infrastructure is safe moving forward, because we need to rely on information that's coming from our intelligence community to understand what is the grand scheme, what is the grand plan here. And what are the intentions that the Russian government has, because, you know, in 2016 it was the elections. Will it get to a point where it's the electrical grid in, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road? And those are the things that we need to ensure that people are talking about and really taking a hard look at. And we do need to take strong action to make sure that people recognize that this is a threat that we know, you know, an attack that we know occurred and a threat that we know continues to exist.
So as a former CIA high-ranking official in the many, many capacities you've had, you're saying you do not favor Robert Mueller and his team going to Moscow and interviewing these 10 people who were indicted?
No. I would be in favor of, if we are given access to those individuals for interviews, I think that is a strong, you know, that is something that is part of the investigative process. If that's something that Special Counsel Mueller would want to pursue, then that is certainly part of their investigative process. What I do not support would be the idea that we would welcome Russian intelligence officers into our investigation
right.
and basically give them further keys to classified American information.
Right. Art, I'm glad I got that. Two more quick things, very quick. AUMF, if you're elected to Congress, are you in favor of a new AUMF being debated in the well rather than going with the one that we've had since 2001?
Absolutely.
Final question. What is the question when I get him on Monday, the number one question you want me to ask Dave Brett?
The number one question I would ask, or I would recommend, or I would suggest that you ask Dave Brad is, my first reaction is, what are his plans for 2019? But realistically.
Well, come on now. That's I want to
ask a
question about. I'm sure his plans in 2019 is to go back to
the number one question that I would want to ask him is, you know, and related to this topic, because I did disagree with him strongly on the statement that he put out. You know, can he separate his affiliation with his party and with the president and take a couple steps back and recognize the threat that is facing this country? And I would encourage him to do so. The second question that I would like to ask him is, you know, I'm hoping that he will consent to additional debates, because I would like the opportunity for voters to really understand the differences in policies that exist between us and the different ideas for how we can move forward as a country that exists between Congressman Brad, our incumbent, and me, the individual running against him.
Well, he's agreed to us hosting a debate, and your campaign, I believe, has agreed also, if memory serves me. So I just got to get the date set up. And I do appreciate that, and I appreciate your being so accessible. So Tom Perez says that Alexandria Cortez is the future of the Democratic Party. Why aren't they saying that Abigail Spanberger is the future of the Democratic Party?
You know,
is it because you're not a socialist like she is?
That race has gotten a lot of attention because it shocks so many people. I'm more of a slow and steady kind of person. The shock and awe of that race, I think, attracted a lot of media attention. But, you know, I'm focused on the issues that are impacting our district and the issues that are impacting this country. And I think that times that's not as flashy of a story, and I'm perfectly okay with that.
Are you comfortable with me saying that you are not a socialist?
I'm 100% comfortable with you saying that, yes.
Okay, so therefore you have no future in the Democratic Party, according to Tom Perez, your chairman. All right, Abigail Spanberger, breaking news. She's not a socialist or a communist.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. An attempted robbery at a jewelry store prompted a heavy police response in South Texas following initial reports of an active shooter at a Corpus Christi area mall. Officials say reports of shots fired this afternoon were actually the result of glass cases being smashed at a jewelry store in the La Plaza Motel. Police say all known suspects are in custody. No one was injured. 4,000 personnel on the scene in Northern California trying to contain the car fire in Shasta County. The massive wildfires already claimed the lives of two firefighters and injured several others. Firefighters have kept the fire from doing more damage to the city of Redding, but three smaller communities of Ono, Ego, and Gas Point were in danger as flames closed in and residents are packing up to leave. Fire has grown about 35% overnight to 127 square miles. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 877-64-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE.
I'm Clayton Bromberg, the president of Underwoods. While we've earned the reputation as North Florida and South Georgia's preeminent official Rolex jeweler, it's important to point out that at Underwoods we carry other watches too. We start with Seiko, the most reliable and serviceable watch made for under $500. Next we have Tavon, the Swiss-made ladies and men's and dress and sport watches starting at $450. We also carry the Swiss watch Raymond Weil in ladies, men's, and men's sport watches, and they start at $600. If it's a ladies' diamond fashion watch, you need to look at Michelle. They start at $525. Another name we carry is Tudor, inspired by Rolex with the same founder and owner. And their sport watches and chronographs are the rage in Swiss timekeeping. And they're priced from $2,000 to $5,000. So if you're interested in watches, we have what you want at Underwoods. And all of our watches carry a five-year warranty. At Underwoods, San Marco, Avondale, or the shops of Ponte Vedra.
WBOB tackles the issues.
When I look at some of these mass shootings that have happened in the past, a lot of these teachers had to sacrifice themselves to protect their students. Well, why not put them in the best position to fight back?
Every day.
Federal district judge in California expanded the ruling to say that even accompanied children can't be held for more than 20 days. I don't see how they can unless Congress gets its act together and passes legislation.
WBOB, your 2018 election authority. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Most of the major expressways around Metro Jacksonville looking very good right now, but there is one accident to watch out for on I-10 westbound. It's the westbound ramp from I-95 near downtown. Also, emergency road construction on I-10 westbound beyond McDuff. That's blocking the left lane. Other than that, you're doing pretty good. Some afternoon storms, maybe evening storms developing. Watch out for some thunderstorms. Right now, 92 degrees in Jacksonville.
John Frederick's Radio Network. Follow me on Twitter at JF Radio Show. Coming to you live from your nation's capital at our studios here right by the Capitol in Eastern Market at Corey Lewandowski Embassy National Milky Way headquarters. I got a bunch of new microphones here, all because we knew Mark Warner was coming out, so I get new equipment. So I'm really fired up to have him on today. And he is joining us now. Welcome, Senator, Democratic Senior Senator from Virginia, Mark Warner, and he's also the ranking member of the Senate Intel Committee that he sits on. Senator, great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you so much, John.
Okay, so let me start with a disclaimer, may I? Because I like, I believe in complete transparency and all this stuff. We're on the radio. I am a Mark Warner voter, and I endorsed Mark Warner's candidacy for re-election in 2014 over Ed Gillespie, and I voted for him. And if the election were held today, I would do the same thing again. So having said that, now let's get started.
Now it sounds like there's going to be a big butt clause here.
I'm a Mark Warner voter and supporter, and I endorse this candidacy, and I'm proud of it. And it is what it is. Now, we don't always agree on policy, yes, Senator. There's a lot of differences that we have, but I like the fact that you're the ranking member of Intel. And one of the reasons that I endorsed your reelection so emphatically is because I've always found you to be forthright, candid, upfront, and honest. And I appreciate that. And I think we need statesmen of your stature. So thank you for that. And I also... I also appreciated your vote for Gina Haspel for CIA director, bucking your party's opposition to that. So let's get to this Trump-Putin-Helsinki thing. I know you've been upset over it. You put a number of things out, and we had Tim Kaine on earlier. I got his take. But what is the thing that really upset you about that press conference the most?
John, I think there were two things. Ironically, I was having a meeting that day that had been long scheduled with actually Marco Rubio, and we were meeting with parliamentarians, I mean, members of Congress from Latvia, Estonia, from Ukraine, from Poland, Czech Republic, the Brits, the Canadians, the Swedes. You know, all of these countries where they were dealing with Russian interference as well. And we put off the beginning of the meeting because none of us could believe that an American president was standing there in public basically kowtowing to Vladimir Putin and, you know, denying the idea that Russia doesn't use what's called active measures in not only in American elections, but in all their countries as well. And one of the things that we were talking to with the Brits, and there was the French representative ended up not getting there. I think that they maybe had partied a little bit too much the day before with the World Cup victory. But if you add up the money that the Russians spent in our elections, in the British elections, in the French elections, it's less than the cost of one new F-35 airplane. So this is a good return on investment for Russia. They determined back in 2011, their equivalent of the chairman of their Joint Chiefs of Staff said Russia couldn't compete with the West in planes, tanks, guns, ships, but in the realm of cyber and misinformation and disinformation, Russia could compete. And frankly, they have done extraordinarily well. And so I expected an American president to go in and be strong and stand up to Putin, and I don't think that happens. Just one last comment, then I'm sure you got rebuttal, but, you know, I thought historically, if John F. Kennedy had not pushed back on Nikita Khrushchev when Khrushchev was trying to sneak missiles into Cuba, the world would be a very different place. If Ronald Reagan hadn't been so strong in going to Berlin and saying, Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Instead, he said, okay, Mr. Gorbachev, I'll just agree that you're going to reform internally. You know, we might not have seen the fall of the Soviet Union. So I was just, frankly, I was just stunned. I couldn't believe my ears when he said, you know, that he basically dismissed Dan Coats, who President Trump picked as his director of national intelligence, who was a good guy. I served with him on the Intelligence Committee. Again, I went against my party and led a big effort to get him confirmed when he basically kind of dismissed the findings of our intelligence community. So, I try to keep a little temperate, but my head has been spinning the last few days.
Is this not a matter of style over substance? I mean, the president said that, look, when Rod Rothenstein went to him, the deputy attorney general, and he said, I'm going to do these 12 indictments of these GRU military officials who are spies. We're going to indict them. We have the evidence. Do you want me to wait and do the indictments after your Helsinki meeting, or do you want me to do them now? You make the decision. Well, it would seem to me that if the president really didn't want to deal with this issue, he'd have said, just wait till I get back, as long as you give me the option. But instead, he, we understand, reviewed all 12 of them, got the information, got all the background intel, said, go ahead and release it now. I want to deal with Putin with that. Does it privately. But then isn't maybe it's could this just be a style issue that the president doesn't want a public confrontation when he's trying to negotiate a platform of conversation on some of these other issues like Syria, et cetera?
Let me make 2 points. One, I don't know if I, and I hate to say this, but I don't know if I believe that that leak from the White House about that the president reviewed the indictments before. And I do think the president was notified before, and I know that, but whether he kind of had the agreement that it's determined before or after, I just don't know whether that's true. And it just seems, if he'd actually done that, that he might have released that information before the summit. But again, I don't, you know, will not know. And that's part of the that's another part of the problem that I have. Stylistically, I think this president is not a, he's not a detail guy. He's not a guy that, you know, hits the books before he goes into a meeting. And it was one of the concerns that I had, the biggest concerns, and not just me, I, all of my Republican colleagues had the same, you know, he kind of goes in and thinks he's going to wing it. He's going to, like, make some immediate rapport. Vladimir Putin doesn't wing anything. Vladimir Putin's a trained KGB agent. He's been on the world stage for 18 years. He's dealt with four American presidents. And one of the things that frightens me to, that frightens me to death, and I think you're seeing the American defense community and intelligence community trying to stumble now, is because I was afraid that Putin might come into the meeting, and I don't, you know, I'm trying to get a readout on this. And did Putin bring maps of Syria or maps of Ukraine? Did he come in with a huge amount of detailed information? And frankly, my fear is that Putin would come in and flatter Mr. Trump and then start bringing out all these details, and Trump might have agreed. I don't know what he signed off on in that secret meeting, and that concerns me. It concerns me greatly.
Well, they're saying they didn't sign off on anything or make any agreements. They said they had a conversation about things for future elaboration. I think that's what the White House said in the press conference yesterday, officially, yeah, Senator Warner, if memory serves me correct.
John, I guess here's, we don't know. Here's, let's just give, you know, one other comparison. I actually thought the fact that Mr. Trump kind of stirred things up and decided to sit down with Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, was a good thing. Mm-hmm. He goes into that meeting. He does it again, one-on-one. Now, Kim Jong-un is a rookie on the world stage, so I'm not sure he came in all that much better prepared. But then the day after that meeting, again, we have no notice what really went on. The president tweets out, hey, you know, everybody can sleep easily. North Korea is no longer a threat. That just is not the case, John. I mean, you know, the follow-up meeting with the Secretary of State was a disaster. I feel bad for Mike Pompeo. And our intelligence community, it continues to say that, you know, North Korea is continuing hostile actions. It hasn't started to denuclearize. So I think he left, again, Americans with a false impression of security after the meeting with North Korea. And that's North Korea. That's not a, as much of an existential threat as Russia is. And it just, I'm bothered beyond belief. On top of that, then, we had yesterday, and then again, the White House tried to change their story. But Mr. Trump said, oh, you know, he doesn't think the Russians continuing to interfere in 2018 elections. Again, that's just not true. I mean, the CIA, we've had intelligence briefs. I'm trying to make sure we get some of this declassified, but I had lots and lots of our members read some of the classified materials on that very subject of Russian ongoing intervention. And matter of fact, Dan Coats made a speech about it last Friday.
Mm-hmm. We are with Democratic Senator Mark Warner from Virginia, Senior Senator. Mark Warner is also the ranking member on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Senator, two things. Number one, I was at the press conference yesterday in the White House, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that when the president answered the question with the word no, he meant no more questions, not no, they're not meddling now. So I think we've cleared that up. And I did get your communication on that. And certainly if the president did say no in the manner that everybody thought he did or interpreted to be, you're spot on. But they clarified that and said he meant no more questions.
But it wasn't there. I was not there, so I can only hear. But this was not just CNN. This was also Fox News reporting and others. You know, there was at least a couple hours there where everyone had the presumption that he was saying no to continued Russian engagement. Yeah, I know the press secretary came out later and tried to clear it up, but boy, there was a lot of ambiguity on that. And again, it feels to me like the president's staff comes in and tries to help him after the fact. My concern will be, and I think we'll probably see this, because I think the one thing about this president that I give is, you know, he doesn't hide his feelings. So I will wager you that within the next couple of days, either through tweeting or in interviews, he'll probably reiterate the fact that he still doesn't think Russian did it or continues to do it. I mean, it just seems a bit strange to me that he's so obsessed on this topic, so obsessed about the Mueller investigation. I think Mueller's played it straight. I think our Senate Intelligence Committee investigation, where our Chairman Richard Burr and I are working together, we're trying to reserve judgment until we see all the facts. If the president really doesn't have anything to hide and there's nothing there, the less he would say about it, the sooner it would all get done.
There's no denying that the Russians have been meddling in our election center. They've been doing it for 100 years, right? There's nothing changes. The only thing that changes is the way they do it in the cyber now. I mean, both of us, I'm a little older than you, but we grew up in kind of the same time frame. They ran Gus Hall for president, Communist Party USA, and the KGB would come over with suitcases full of $20 bills to finance his campaign. So this isn't anything new. It's just the way they're doing it is new. But to deny that they're doing it is it
can
doesn't.
Can I just add one thing there? I think you're right. Russians have tried to intervene and mess with not just with us. I mean, with all nations. I mean, they practice misinformation and disinformation.
Right.
They live in a country where they don't have a free press.
Right.
But what happened that was different, and I think it frankly, and I, one of the first ones to say, the Obama administration was slow to pick this up and should have responded stronger. And I think the intelligence community was slow to pick it up. Three things that they did in 2016 that was qualitatively different than before, and part of it was driven by the ability to disseminate information so much quicker, was, people hack into each other's information all the time. Spies do some of that. But they haven't usually weaponized that information. And weaponization meant leaking through cutouts like Cusifer, like WikiLeaks and others, damaging information at select times. They also really, touched, and I think they were almost surprised they found as much vulnerability over 21 of our state's electoral systems. We were, there was huge concern they might come in and mess with the votes, or, you know, you don't even have to mess with the votes. If you want to undermine confidence, you just need to change a bunch of people's registration from one precinct to another to throw chaos. And then third, and this is where the government was, our government was asleep at the switch, and frankly, the social media companies were as well. They use social media in ways that we've never seen before. So the level and organization and the direction of this campaign from the very, very top it was really unprecedented.
And so what are the steps being taken now? Let's take President Trump and his style and his responses out of this for a second.
Sure.
What is the U.S. government doing now in order to prevent this from happening in, like, say, the midterms?
Great, great question. And let me take it in each category. In terms of protecting candidates and political parties from further cyber attack, we're really not doing too much. I mean, I think there are efforts to better educate, to try to, you know, have people do dual authentication, to make sure you warn people on campaigns not to open, you know, suspicious emails. But we're really not doing as much. And, you know, this is a hard one because of our you know, appropriate First Amendment rights. But, you know, I think we can actually learn from countries like some of the Baltic nations and others who have done a better job of educating their political candidates and parties to do better defenses. That would be not the one thing we should do. Second thing, on election security, in a normal administration, because this is, everybody recognizes this problem, because, you know, state and local election officials are very concerned about too much federal intervention, there's nobody that's really in charge of election security. In a normal administration, somebody in the White House would be designated as the top election security person to try to convene, you know, state registrars and others and to do more security. We haven't done that. We have put $380 million in, and we in Virginia, I'm really proud, we yanked out before the gubernatorial elections any of the machines that didn't have a paper trail. So even if you hacked in, there's some auditable paper trail after the fact. Mm-hmm. We need to do that everywhere. I'm concerned that three companies control 90% of all the voter files, the kind of back office maintenance. And my fear is that you could have intervention in those voter files. And one of the things we could do there is, you know, frankly, these companies, we need to have some level of standards or some independent ability to go in and audit to make sure that their systems are secure. And then the final issue around social media, we need some, you know, this gets again tricky, and we're going to bring the social media companies back in, but we really need some guideposts. Let me give you at least two examples that I would hope most of your listeners would at least agree on, because they range from fairly light touch to much more, but two of the lightest touch things would be, I think every American, every Virginian, ought to have a right to know when they're being contacted by any entity, whether that entity is a real person or whether it's a bot. That's not going to get rid of all the bad actors, but at least it would give you an ability to maybe judge, make your own judgment on the content, if this is an automated response versus a real human being. And secondly, you know, we ought to be willing to put something like a geocoding in place so that if somebody says that John Frederick's, you know, tweeting you or sending you a message from Washington, D.C., but it's actually Boris in St. Petersburg, Russia, should there be an indicator that would come up on your screen that doesn't say, don't believe this, but if it's saying it's coming from Washington, but it's actually coming from a foreign nation, I mean, that might, again, put put people on notice, because we need to be careful how the Internet can manipulate people on both, you know, every end of the political spectrum. The last point I'll make on this is that, you know, we're still trying to catch, you know, fake. We're trying to still catch, you know, people creating fake accounts with fake identities. The next generation is called deepfake technology, where they'll have somebody who will look like your video image with your words coming out of your mouth, but they're not your words, And and that will, you know, the amount that would dismay your audience or others, if they see a real-time image of somebody that looks like John Frederick, but it's really, it's total fake, I mean, that can mess not only with elections, but it would mess with our markets. It could mess. If somebody looked like they were the chairman of the Fed saying X, Y, Z, and that's a fake persona, boy, this is, you know, we're at the beginning of the realm of manipulation. I know it sounds like James Bond spy movies, but this is what's coming, and we just, you know, we got to figure this out together.
There's one thing to have a fake Facebook meme or a fake Twitter handle. It's another thing to click a video on and you see yourself speaking and it's you talking, but it's not you saying something else. That is a very dangerous thing. And you say you could disrupt markets and everything else. Almost out of time. Got to ask you this question, though. Get to politics. Your chairman of the Democratic National Party, Tom Perez, said that new primary winner, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, New York, Bronx, who's claimed she's a socialist. Tom Perez says she's the future of the Democratic Party. I just got to ask you this, Senator. Where on earth does that leave Mark Warner?
Well, it leaves me in a place. I don't know if I agree with Mr. Perez. I will tell you this, that I feel that candidly, both of our political parties are pretty firmly ensconced in the 20th century. And the thing that we need the most, I mean, we're going to come into an era where technology, artificial intelligence, is going to change all our lives, whether we want to or not. And it's going to disrupt a lot of our lives. And I think a lot of both of our political parties are too backwards looking. And whoever, whatever coalition of individuals that can say to Americans, hey, you know, we're not going to give you everything, but we're going to try to make sure everybody gets an opportunity to earn a good life, and we're going to figure out a way to sort through this change in a way that gives folks that fair shot, they're going to be successful. But right now, some of the solution sets that are being offered, again, by both political parties, seem to be fairly backwards looking.
It would be tough for you right now to go to Iowa and say, hi, I'm Mark Warner. I ran a state. By the way, I'm the capitalist. I came from nothing. I was sleeping in my car. I found a way to make a lot of money, and that's the American way. Vote for me. I mean, they'd throw you out of the place. You made money. You're a capitalist. You can't run for president. Senator,
well,
thanks for being with us.
Just last point. Listen, you know, I think that yeah, that's part of the American dream, is that chance to, you know, do well, fail. I failed twice. And, you know, pick yourself back up and get back in the game. And I think Americans respect that. But I think they, what I think is what concerns folks is they feel like there's not just economic inequality, but economic insecurity. And, you know, the fact is most folks aren't going to work for the same job for 35 years the way my dad did. And we got to figure out a new combination of a social contract that meets the economy where it's at today. And those are the kind of issues that would be a lot more productive to be debating about than some of the things we spend our time in the Congress fighting about.
Well, I happen to think that you're actually the future of the Democratic Party, not Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, because, you know, the fact is you did fail two times, and once you had to live out of your vehicle. Anybody that has been there in their life and has had to pick themselves up and figure it out, they have a little bit of a different perspective on the world, sir. Don't you agree?
Yes, sir. All right, John. All right. Thank you so much.